On today's podcast, tape 21, Bookends by Simon and Garfunkel and Head by the Monkees.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
Hey, hey, we're Simon and Garfunkel, and we're looking at their Bookends album, which came out in April 1968. It's their fourth album. And it's yet another one of the albums we've been looking at that kind of has a concept on one side and then a collection of other songs on the other. So the concept album is basically a journey from childhood into old age, and it's suitably bookended with the Bookends theme. And then on the other side, it's a collection of various oddities, singles, some unreleased songs, but perhaps most notably songs that were either written for or included on the soundtrack to The Graduate, which had come out, I think, if I remember rightly, 10 weeks earlier. So it's quite quick. This is following on quite quickly from that. It's an album that is thought to be, if not the best Simon and Garfunkel album, then certainly one of their best. It was made number one in the UK, but it's only about 30 minutes long. It's quite a short album. And I suppose there's another kind of divide in terms of the sides, in that the first side, the sort of concept side, is perhaps more folk, whereas there's a bit more rock on side two. The other thing to say about this album is that although it is very short, it is one of those albums which has spent, the artist spent a lot of time putting together. So, for example, the song Punky's Dilemma, apparently they had 50 hours of recordings to put that together. So it's kind of one of those note-for-note re-recordings to make it perfect, according to presumably Paul Simon and less so Art Garfunkel, but I may be doing Garfunkel a disservice there. So it wasn't an album that I knew before coming across this Robert Pollard list, although it does have the one song that I really like by Simon Garfunkel on it, but we'll come to that perhaps in a bit. Was it one that you knew?
Not this album, no. No, I mean, my mum and dad had some Simon and Garfunkel albums back when I was a kid, and some Paul Simon, some later Paul Simon solo albums from the 70s as well. They didn't have this one, or at least I don't think they did. I used to listen to Bridge Over Troubled Water, the album Bridge Over Troubled Water, but in particular the song Bridge Over Troubled Water and side one of the album. I have no recollection at all of what's on side two of that album, but I really liked side one, and I really liked the song Bridge Over Troubled Water, and in particular I liked the arrangement, the strings and the way everything comes in verse three, Sail On Silver, you know. So I'm more keen on that than I am on their sort of plain old acoustic Are You Going to Strawberry Fair kind of stuff. But no, I knew some of the songs on this album. Like I knew Hazy Shade of Winter, but I'd never heard their version before. I just knew the Bangles.
Who did you hear it by?
The Bangles.
Okay.
And which was a hit in the 80s for them. Obviously I know Mrs. Robinson, and I know that one about America. I'd heard that one before. But no, it's not. Yeah. The rest of the album I'd not heard before.
Can I ask you, because when I first heard this, I was expecting folky sort of acoustic guitar stuff, and there's a lot of that, especially on the first side. But what I wasn't expecting was a Moog bass line.
Yeah.
So when Save the Life of My Child kicks in, that's a really unexpected sound for me for a Simon and Garfunkel album. That and actually probably is the coolest sound on the whole album, I think.
Because it's got those sort of sound collage elements as well, and those bits of sort of noises from the city. It just kind of reminded me, and the Moog synthesizer reminded me a little bit of Living for the City by Stevie Wonder. Oh, it's obviously nowhere near as good as that. But yeah, and it was a bit Dylan-y, you know, because this is the thing. I remember as a teenager when I was getting into Bob Dylan and talking to my dad about it, who is also a big Bob Dylan fan. And I remember him saying to me at the time, you know, the thing is, you know, Bob Dylan, you know, the next one in the hierarchy after Dylan is Paul Simon. You should go and listen to some Paul Simon stuff. And I rang my dad on the phone earlier this week to double check.
Good way to ring him. That's a good way to ring him.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I could have rung his doorbell. I was just clarifying that for the listener. So I rang him to ask him if he remembers making this comment and what he thought of it now. He said he doesn't remember making it. He can certainly believe that he did say it. And he used the caveat that Paul Simon was on a par with Dylan, or very nearly on a par with Dylan, for a very brief couple of years. He didn't maintain it, or has as many, you know, periods where his work is as astounding as Dylan's. But he did maintain that for a couple of years, Paul Simon was up there with Dylan.
I'm going to say there's nothing on here that matches Dylan for me, but. There is some decent songwriting. I mean, I do like Save the Life of My Child very much. I think it sounds good, and I think it's quite an interesting story. Obviously, it's about, you know, sort of suicide and urban youth and all that sort of thing. And I like the fact, as you say, the sound collage-y bits in it. And I didn't notice until I read somewhere, and then I went back and listened, that in the sort of the cacophony bit in towards the end, you can actually pick out the sound of silence, not silence, but the song, The Sound of Silence. Is also being played. I thought that's quite interesting. And I think the song America is also a really good song in terms of lyrics. I think it's really interesting. Kind of a Born to Run theme going on there, looking for lost America. But then there's nothing much else on that side that does it for me.
Okay. Well, I'll come back to that because I have a favourite song. I just talked about America, but also just before I do, you mentioned before that lots of people say this is their best album. On the Rolling Stones 500 Greatest Albums of All Time, the 2003 version of that, they had Bridge Over Troubled Water at number 51, and Bookends was number 233. So it was in there, but it was quite... I would say, generally speaking, in polls and that kind of stuff, Bridge Over Troubled Water is the one that comes up.
I think that's
yeah,
that is true.
But
I think this is the second one. I mean, if you name a third Simon and Garfunkel album, we're knackered, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's one called Wednesday Morning 4 a.m. or something like that. But I only know that because I remember the cover from when I worked at HMV back in the old days. I've never listened to it.
As a live album as well, isn't there? But yeah. I'm sure they've done others.
The song...
Yeah, okay, side one, there is a storyline, I suppose, or a theme. And as I say, Save Life of My Child, America, I like. Then Overs, which I really don't like at all, is, I suppose, about marriage, is it?
It seems to be like a couple breaking up, is it? And maybe because it comes after the coach journey of Paul Simon singing about this girl, Kathy, he's been on the coach journey with in America. And I wondered if it was they're then breaking up. And then it goes into old people, doesn't it?
Well, the voices of old people, yeah. This is Garfunkel's bit, isn't it? He's gone into an OAP home and recorded all these olds talking about stuff.
Well, mucus mainly, and one guy's just talking about how he's got a really bad cold, and he's discussing mucus, which you know, I'd be surprised if there are any other folk albums from the 60s that have the word mucus in it.
Well, that's a fair point, and I'd also suggest that Bez, who I think is very much as the Art Garfunkel of Happy Mondays, has probably never recorded OAPs.
No, it's one. Hang on, Art Garfunkel is the main singer. You can't call him the Bez. he's the main singer. You know, on most of these songs,
he might be singing it, but you know, is he dancing? Has he got maracas? No.
He's got a much nicer voice than Paul Simon, in my opinion. I'd rather listen to his voice than Paul Simon's.
But, I'm being unkind. Of course, but the trouble is, it's too nice, isn't it?
That's kind of the thing. That if you'd asked me before I'd spent time listening to this album, and you'd have said, what do you think of Simon and Garfunkel? I would have said, well, all their music is a bit too nice. It's got no edge. But there's quite a lot on here that's got edge, in fairness to it. I was probably just thinking of Parsley, Sage, Rosemary and Thyme, you know, all that kind of stuff. But going back to the song America... I was just wondering, have you done much hitchhiking, Kicker, in your time?
Probably not in the last 40 years.
So what would have you ever hitchhiked a journey of say 371 miles or thereabouts?
371 miles. Yeah. No, I don't. No, I haven't gone that far.
Because he says he hitchhiked from Saginaw, which is in Michigan, to Pittsburgh. In Pennsylvania, which is 371 miles, five hours and 38 minutes, according to Google Maps, if you just drive it straight in a car. Mm-hmm. It took him 4 days. Four days?
But he's an odd-looking bloke, isn't he? So you're not going to pick him up.
He's got Kathy with him. He's got his girlfriend with him. Yeah. He's doing something wrong there if it's taken him 4 days to hitchhike a five-hour journey. Admittedly, I'm not... I've only hitchhiked, a 5 mile journey, and I've been pretty unsuccessful.
Oh, I've gone further than that. I'm trying to think. I've definitely hitchhiked from Sheffield. I'm going to say Sheffield to Peterborough.
Oh, that is quite a long way. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It didn't take me 5 days though.
No. The other part, the second part of his journey then, so later in the song, he's in New Jersey. So he's getting on a Greyhound bus in Pittsburgh, and then next thing you know, he's in New Jersey. And that's a similar distance. That's about 5.5 hour journey as well. And he says he's on a Greyhound bus. I looked on greyhound.com because they are notoriously cheap, aren't they, the Greyhound buses? It's the cheapest way to get around the USA.
Okay.
How much do you think? So he didn't specify where he was going on the journey, but he's mentioned the New Jersey Turnpike. You can't get off a bus at the New Jersey Turnpike because it's just a motorway. So I assumed he was going to Newark because that's his hometown, apparently. That's where he was born. I assumed he was homeward bound. So how much do you reckon it costs today to travel on a Greyhound bus from Pittsburgh to Newark in New Jersey? It's about 5 hour drive.
So the 5 hour ride,
but probably a bit longer in a bus because it stops.
I'm going to say $50.
That's a very good guess. It's actually $62, which is about just under 50 quid. I think that's really reasonable.
But maybe... It's not bad. But of course we're coming from that from living in this little poisoned island of ours where everything is ridiculously expensive.
Oh, exactly. So looking up a train earlier today to get me from Crewe to Bath to go and see a Tindersticks gig, 81 quid.
Yeah,
and that's a lot less distance.
I do feel we're kind of going off topic a little bit.
Yeah. So anyway, my next thing was I was going to say that old friends. Which is which is then goes into the bookends theme. Yeah. So I kind of listening to the album, I didn't realise they were two different songs, but they are. I think that's amazing. I think that's an absolutely brilliant song. But the lyrics are good. It's about just two old friends sitting on a park bench, and I think possibly by the end of the song, one of them's died. But anyway, it's the strings. It's all about the strings for me. A bit like Bridge Over Troubled Water. It's the same guy who done the string arrangement. It's a guy called Jimmy Haskell, who's you know, an absolute, a very, very prolific film composer and producer, and he's worked with absolutely everybody. He's no longer alive anymore. But I could listen to that, and indeed I have listened to that lots and lots of times, just because I find the arrangement so fantastic, and it makes what could be quite a sort of silly, sentimental song into, for me, quite a moving and sentimental song because of the arrangement.
Well, See, I don't really like that. I don't like the orchestration particularly, but I do appreciate that that's not really my area. What I thought was quite interesting was that, yeah, it is quite moving, I suppose. But Paul Simon was 27 when he wrote that. And yeah. I'm not sure that I could, at 27, I could really have got into the head of a 70-year-old. I think that's quite impressive in itself, because it does sound about right.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was really good. It's my favourite song on the album that I didn't know before.
Okay.
I suspect your favourite song on the album is one you did know before, which is It Mrs. Robinson?
Yeah, by Mile, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously I like that as well. Doesn't everybody? It's just a great song.
It is a great song. But here's the thing. So some of the things that I really like about it, obviously it's incredibly catchy, and part of the reason it's so catchy is that you don't need to know the words, because there's lots of non-wordy bits.
Mm-hmm.
So the DDDs and the doody-doos and all that. What I didn't realise was the reason for that, because it opens with a sort of a DDD doody-doo bit.
Yep.
Because he hadn't finished it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so that was just a filler.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting. So I didn't realise that until I've done a little bit of research on this. I think it just, well, somebody's obviously said to him, you don't need to put any words in here, that's fine. Now, but I think it's a stellar song, isn't it, really?
It is. And I think one of the reasons you mentioned it's catchy, it's really clever as well, because it's kind of half in G major and it's half in E major, which are two keys that aren't particularly related, but he transitions between them really well with an E7th chord, which is that bit. You know, it's really clever the way he goes between two quite unrelated keys and back again, and you don't even really notice. But that's part of the reason why it's catchy, I think. It's got that that riff, and talking of riffs, Hazy Shade of Winter is a brilliant riff. I've always, yes. And I like the riff on the Bangles version, because they rock it up a lot more. The song's all right. But it's all about the riff, really. So that makes the Bangles version better.
Well, I agree that it's about the riff. But actually, I like the trumpet on it as well. Mrs. Robinson, I think, was the number one song.
Was it?
I think Hazy Shade of Winter was also a hit.
It was definitely a single for Simon and Garfunkel. Apparently, Paul Simon once met Joe DiMaggio, who asked him,
"Oh, really?
What's that about?" We say, "Where have you gone? You know, I'm still around. I'm, you know, what is it about?" And Paul Simon explained to him that it was kind of meaning, you know, especially at a time when, you know, presidents were being in trouble for not telling the truth and all that kind of stuff. Very different times to today, obviously. But, you know, the basically a wholesome hero where have those figures gone was what he meant. And he apparently did a good job of explaining that to Joe DiMaggio, because they parted with a handshake. And indeed, I think at some kind of memorial service after Joe DiMaggio died, Paul Simon sung it in the New York stadium. Or whichever sport it was that Joe DiMaggio did. Is it baseball, right?
I think it is baseball.
He probably played for the New York Yankees. If anybody out there is a fan of another baseball team and is absolutely furious with me for getting that fact wrong. Anyway, are you trying to seduce me, Mrs. Robinson? Are you Mrs. Robinson? Are you trying to seduce me? Are you Mrs. Robinson?
Yeah, we haven't got time for that.
I've never seen that film.
You've never seen it?
No. I don't think I've ever even heard Dustin Hoffman say that line. I've just heard other people doing impressions of Dustin Hoffman saying that line.
Okay. Yeah. No,
he's playing a Japanese fella, right, by the sound of it? Mrs. Robinson.
I think you're being unkind.
Okay.
It's all right, The Graduate. It's a film. It's all right.
Yeah, I've never seen it. But I probably should, shouldn't I? Probably should.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come on to films that I have watched for research when we're talking about the next album.
I want to talk about Faking It.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Apparently Faking It is potentially about Art Garfunkel.
Yeah. The band are sounding good on that one.
Yes. I think the guitar could be turned up a bit more.
Yeah. The brass is really nice and... Yeah, the bass guitar is really good.
Well, there are hand claps on it, so it must be good.
Indeed, yeah.
So that was released as a single. On the, if you get an original copy of the Faking It single, it has the time of the song as 2:74.
Right, 2:74.
Yeah, because it's actually 3:14, but radio stations weren't playing anything over 3 minutes.
That's clever. Did they fool anyone with that?
No, yeah. It wasn't a hit, was it? So not that many.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that Punky's Dilemma, the song after it, it's the second of these podcasts in a row where we are talking about a song that has breakfast cereals mentioned in it. Life is just a bowl of all bran on the Small Faces one last time. And this one, he's wishing he was cornflakes. He wishes... correction. He wishes he was a single cornflake and not one of your... Not one of your supermarket own brands either. He specifies, wish I was a Kellogg's cornflake.
Yeah.
Floating in my
bowl. But
he
also wishes he was an English muffin.
About to make the most out of a toaster. That's my favourite bit in that song.
There's whistling on that song.
Yeah, there is.
Which I think whistling in a song is the antithesis of hand claps on a song.
What you're saying, so hand claps improve any song?
Yes.
And whistling...
And whistling makes any song worse.
I'm just trying to remember what wedding present song has whistling on it. It's everyone thinks he looks daft. That's pretty good.
Would it be better without the whistling?
I wouldn't say the whistling adds a great deal to it. Of course, talking of whistling, probably the most famous whistling on a pop song is Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, the outro of that, which the whistling wasn't intended to be on the record. That was Otis Redding whistling what he intended the brass section to play. but then, because of his death, they just released it as it was. And it was a massive hit with the whistling on it. But it was meant to have a brass section playing that bit.
And I think it would have been better with a brass section on it. OK. I think the only song we really haven't talked about is At the Zoo, which is a bit silly. And actually, it's similar to... Sid Barrett's songs? It was all about animals and that, right?
The personification of the animals and giving them all kinds of characteristics, which I'm not too sure is accurate.
Monkeys stand for honesty. Really, they don't.
Have you ever watched the monkeys at the zoo? Yeah, I'm not sure they do.
I'll tell you what I have done. As you will be aware, there's a safari park type place very close to where we live.
Yes.
And there's a monkey section in it.
Yes.
And I very quickly learned that the best thing to do with that monkey section, which you can drive through, is that you don't drive through it. You drive to the side of it and you watch the idiots who are driving through, having their cars wrecked by the bloody monkeys in it.
Or what you do is you go through it last. Yes, you do that, and then you wait until the place is nearly closing and there's not much traffic around, and you drive through it quite fast, because then they can't get on your windscreen wipers and all that stuff.
Yeah,
exactly.
Anyway, not honest.
Yeah.
Dishonest monkeys are. Giraffes are insincere. That seems a bit unfair.
I thought that was unkind. The bit that I definitely don't agree with, which is orangutans are sceptical of changes in their cages. I think actually to the contrary, because, you know, enrichment, which is what, zoos add sort of a new thing for the animals to play with, I don't think they'd be orangutan. I think they'd be very curious about any new object that was in their cages. So I think it's actually, you know, directly contradicting reality. Well, I wonder if he's ever
been to a zoo. There's a lot of inaccuracy, isn't there? There's a lot of inaccuracy in this song. It's fine. Right, but apparently there was it was mooted as a kid's book.
I read it was made into a kid's book.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh okay.
And they had to make some changes because when it says the hamsters turn on frequently, meaning presumably in the Timothy Leary sense, that he in the book they had to give the hamsters headlights.
Yeah. See, I'd have given them a radio.
You turn me on my radio, like Joni.
Yeah, I mean, favourite songs, I think, are we both in agreement that Mrs. Robinson's the best song on it?
I actually prefer Old Friends, but the Mrs. Robinson's a close second. And I like America as well.
I like America. I like Saving the Life of My Child as well. And A Hazy Shade of Winter's all right.
Yeah, they're both good. But Old Friends is probably my favourite.
What are you going to give it?
I think I'm going to go 5.5. And I would say this. I think I probably prefer the first half to the second half. But there's definitely songs I'll go back and listen to again. But there's definitely songs I won't.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm actually completely in agreement. I've written down 5.5 as well.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. It's been a while since we gave an album the same score, I think.
I think so. Now, before we move on to the next one, I should tell you a little bit about the version that I have of this album. It's a little bit battered. It's an original 1968 version, but with the lyrics on the back. But interestingly, it's obviously I didn't buy it at the time. I'm not that old, so it's a second-hand copy. And somebody's written their name on the back of it. So because it's almost inevitable that the person whose record this is will be listening, I'd like to say hello to Christine A. Worthington, who's written the name on the back of this album and dated it February 1969. So she got it fairly quickly after it came out. And if she'd like to drop us a line, that would be lovely.
Yeah. I'd like to know why she gave it away.
Upgraded to a tape cassette.
Yeah. Well, maybe an 8-track.
Well, there you go. All right, so we're going to move on. And the second album we're going to look at is by The Monkees. And it's their soundtrack album, Head. So it's actually the sixth album that The Monkees released, and actually the last that features Peter Tork on vocals until they sort of got back together again in 1987. And the last to feature all four of the original Monkees until they all got back together again in 1996. So it's kind of like a end of an era type thing. It is a soundtrack to a very odd film, which I believe you've gone away and watched again, which is excellent. We'll hear about that in a moment. The film stars various interesting people, including Frank Zappa, I believe. And
briefly,
I'm not sure. Is Jack Nicholson in it? I think he's certainly something to do with it.
Yes.
Jack Nicholson, anyway, coordinates this album in the sense that he's compiled it. There are six full-length songs on it, and then the rest of the album is made up of incidental music from the film by Ken Thorne, and there's some dialogue and sound effects and silly little things going on there between the six songs. So there are three songs on each side, sort of filled out with a bit of other stuff. I think the film I'm going to summarise as being about being trapped in a box. Would you like to expand on that?
There's certainly parts of it where they're trapped. I saw this film quite a long time ago and had very, very little recollection of it. So I watched it again a couple of weeks ago. It's all right, but it's a bit weird. And it doesn't really make any sense. It's basically like a lot of little sort of sketches, most of which aren't very funny. But there's an overarching kind of point to it. I mean, there's bits where it's intercut with footage of from the Vietnam War and stuff like that. So there's definitely a point to it that they're trying to make an anti-war kind of thing. But in along the way, there's lots of being trapped, which I suppose maybe that's a comment on the Monkees and how they felt in their career up to that point, not being given much artistic freedom. They certainly were given a lot of artistic freedom for that film, by the look of it, because it's a big departure from the TV show. And there's a few bits where they're performing some of the songs. They're performing Circle Sky, Can You Dig It? That's about it, really. And there's some other bits. Quite a lot of weird dialogue which comes up on the soundtrack in sort of random places.
Do you think, having seen the film, because I'm pretty sure I have seen it, but a long time ago, and I don't really remember it. I vaguely remember something about Mickey Dolan's drowning. Is that at the beginning?
Yes, that's right. At the very start, there's a bunch of policemen standing on a big bridge, and then the Monkees kind of run along. Mickey Dolan jumps off the bridge and into the water, and it goes into the Pauper's song, the opening song.
Yeah. So I've got a horrible feeling that actually, when I say I've seen the film, I've probably seen the beginning of it and thought, I'm not watching this shit, and switched off. But having seen the film recently, do you think it helps make more sense of what's going on the album as a soundtrack?
Well, I suppose all the other bits of sort of speech and stuff, once you've seen the film, you know the context of them, but it doesn't make them any more enjoyable when you're listening to the album. They still get in the way. And what would be a lot better, in my opinion, would it be if they just put out, you know, the what is it, the five songs? There's five actual
six,
songs.
There's six songs, but they probably could have put five of them out.
Well, I'd lose one of those songs. Just have five of them. And it would be
pretty
all right.
Pretty good EP then, eh?
It would be all right, wouldn't it?
It would be all right, yeah. So what I suggest is, rather than spending time talking about the bits that we perhaps can't make sense of and don't make much sense in terms of not seeing the film, if we focus on the songs then.
Yeah, okay.
As you said, right at the start of the film, there's this scene where he jumps into Mickey Dolenz jumps in the water, and he's the lead singer on the Pauper song, which is the first song proper on here, which is a Goffin King number.
Indeed, yeah.
And it's pretty epic sounding, and it's pretty psychedelic.
Very psychedelic,
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Sounds a bit like The Birds. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's all right.
All right. I do like that one. I have to say that for me is a keeper on the EP.
Yeah. And then the next proper song, which is they actually perform in the film, is called Circle Sky. With its chorus, looks like we made it once again, which is an up-tempo one. We've got a good guitar riff.
Bo Diddley-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit, yeah. Michael Nesmith is playing a really, really, really cool white Gibson SG guitar in that, which inspired me to... I know years and years ago when I was looking at buying Gibson SG guitar and it was way out my price range, and I thought, I'll go and look on eBay and see what... You know, now they're even more expensive.
and you're even poorer.
Yes. Yeah, so I won't be buying a Gibson SG guitar, but, you know. Maybe Catherine Worthington or whatever her name has got one that she can just give away. That's pretty good.
On the film, it's they're playing live, right?
Yeah, they're actually playing that song to a crowd of people, yeah. Yeah, and then Can You Dig It? The next one, which is sung by Mickey Dolenz and is quite sort of a little bit oriental, isn't it? It's, you know, we've talked a bit on that podcast how you have to have the obligatory slightly Indian sounding song.
Well, I'm going to say there's bongos on it.
There is. And in the film, they're kind of performing it with a lot of belly dancing girls gyrating around them.
Doesn't really surprise me. It's a Peter Tork song, we should say.
Right. Yeah.
It's okay. And I quite like it, actually. I do particularly like the outro, where it goes a little bit mad.
Yeah, yeah. It's very of its time, isn't it? It's very, very of its time, that song.
Yeah.
More than the others, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Mickey Dolenz is all right. I think the vocals are a bit buried, generally, on these songs. I think I'd like to have them all up a little bit.
Certainly on the Pauper song, yeah, definitely. And then the next song, which is side two of the album, is another Carol King song. This one is co-written with a lady called Toni Stern, who also co-wrote It's Too Late and Where You Lead with Carol King. And it's called As We Go Along. It's a slower one. It's one of the best bits of the film, in my opinion, because it kind of works with just the band all wandering around separately in different sort of various different scenic locations. And Peter Tork is in a sort of snowy mountainscape, which is my particular favourite bit part of that. And it's just like a video. And it's got quite a lot of guitars on it. Carole King's playing guitar on it. Neil Young's playing guitar on it. Ry Cooder's playing guitar on it. I really like that one. The lyrics are good as well.
That was the B-side to Pauper's song, it turns out. I didn't realise that. But, yeah, I think that's a really strong one as well.
Yeah.
A little bit Dylan-esque in terms of the guitar sound, I'd say. I'm quite impressed by the Mickey Dolenz's vocals on it as well. He gets quite emotional.
Yeah, it's my favourite on the album, that one. And again, slightly reminiscent of The Birds to my ears.
Yes.
Or Buffalo Springfield, which is not surprising because it's got, you know, a few of them on it. And then the last song on the album near the end of the film is called... I've missed one out. Daddy's Song.
You've missed out Daddy's Song.
Yeah. It's a silly cabaret song. It's and in the film, Davy Jones is dressed in like a tux and he's doing a dance routine with a girl who is Tony Basil of Oh Mickey, You're So Fine fame.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, David Jones, very much the Ringo of the group, isn't he? This feels like the Ringo song on the album. And, yeah, it's kind of that horrible Broadway style, which I really don't like at all. It is a Nielsen song, and I actually know the original of that. I don't know if you do. No. Which will come up later in this series, actually. It's on Aerial Pandemonium Ballet.
We've got some Nielsen albums to listen to later in this series, haven't we?
So you will be hearing this song again.
If this song is representative of it, I'm not looking forward to those albums.
Particularly representative, but and I would say that the Nielsen version is slightly less annoying.
Sure we've got two more Monkees albums to talk about on the next podcast, so I'm sure I'll tell you about when I saw the Monkees live. But Davy Jones, who we might think, and I even as a kid watching it on the TV, I found Davy Jones quite annoying compared to the other Monkees, who I thought all the other three were pretty cool. When I saw them live, there was a whole horde of sort of older women there who were all there for Davy. They loved Davy. So anyway, I'll talk about that a bit more. But no, I didn't like that song at all. I would lose that. I wouldn't even have that on the EP.
Totally agree. It's the songs on here are all right, but that one isn't. That's dreadful. Then we've got one more song, which is another Peter Tork song, which is titled, long title, Do I Have to Do This All Over Again, which I know does also feature Stephen Stills on guitar.
Yes. It's really good lead guitar part on that.
It's pretty lively psych rock, isn't it? I think the bass playing on it's also really good.
It is, yeah. I mean, a lot of, like a lot of the Monkees stuff, they've got as well as themselves playing on it and some of their other sort of Californian friends, they've also got the Wrecking Crew, you know, all the top boys from the LA session musician scene are playing on this album, as they were on their earlier albums and as they have been on other albums we've discussed on here, like the Beach Boys albums we talked about a few episodes ago.
That's a good one. I really like that one. I would say that's one of my favourites, certainly top two.
Yeah, I like that one as well. I like all of the songs, apart from Daddy's Song, I quite like.
Did you like any of the non-song bit?
Not really. I quite like the bit when, I think it's Bela Lugosi talking, and he said it's some supernatural baloney, and he says, supernatural, no, or baloney, no, I can't remember. Anyway, that bit, that quote is quite good. What does he say? Supernatural, no, baloney, possibly, or something. I can't remember. But anyway, I like that bit, because I like Bela Lugosi, but...
I have to say that I've changed my view on this, because what I did was when I first listened to the album and I thought those bits are really a bit annoying and I can do without that. I mean, especially that bit with the 6 seconds of Davy Jones talking about gravy with hair in it. I mean, doesn't bring anything, does it, really? Maybe it's crucial to the film, I don't know. But actually, I think it kind of works. So I started listening to the whole thing, and then I took out all the non-songs, just listened to the songs. And then just today, actually, I put the album on again and listened to the whole thing. And actually, the move from the silly bits, the talky bits, the dialogue-y bits into the song kind of works. I think it kind of works. The exception are Gravy is a Waste of Time, and the last bit where it's kind of a repetition of everything that you've heard before, sort of excerpts from the previous songs and the Swami dialogue.
Yeah.
With the head chant and all that. Excuse me. Could lose that. But actually, I don't mind the little, you know, the little bit about dandruff was all right, jumping up and down. I don't know what's going on in the film.
They're doing an advert where they're pretending to be dandruff standing on a sort of big head. Hair.
See, that makes it so much clearer. I think it's okay. But nevertheless, I do think that if you really wanted to have a high score, and I'm sure that's what they're retrospectively wishing that they'd thought about, a high score on our podcast series, that it'd probably have been better to release it as an EP.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's going to get a pretty low score from me, because, and largely because, I mean, yeah, the songs are okay, but with the exception of As We Go Along, I'd just much rather listen to, you know, Pleasant Valley Sunday or What Am I Doing Hanging Around, or some of the actual Monkees songs that are Stepping Stones, some of the ones I actually really like. And As We Go Along is it, I really like, and I will go back and listen to that again, but the others, I'll just, if I want to listen to something like that, I'll just listen to some other Monkees songs that are better.
Well, and we may well be coming on to them next time we meet. So I'm going to suggest that you're probably not going to give it much more than a four. What are you going for?
I'm going to give it a little bit less than a four, in fact. I'm going to give it 3.5.
Who'd have thought I'd be the generous one? I'm going to give it a four. Yeah, sorry about that. But we do like some of the songs. And the next programme that we're going to put together is going to look at actually the two albums that preceded this. The two albums we're going to look at are Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn and Jones Limited, and The Birds, The Bees and The Monkees, both which came out before this soundtrack. And I know there is one brilliant song on one of those albums, at least.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcasts, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kicker of Elves and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.